start a party, we will party hard.
Yes! Oh, it is! It is! Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you on a Wednesday night. 790 the ticket. Got Vlad Lusant on the other side of the glass holding it down.
Yes.
With you until 10 o'clock this evening. And listen, Rashad, I know it's already Wednesday, so maybe some of the talking heads on these airwaves have gotten this out of their system already, but I'm still buzzing from Miami's win over Florida State.
Same.
I'm just kind of mad that we had to beat the Noles so badly that Willie Taggart got fired, because I was kind of hoping for like another 3 years of Taggart. just thinking selfishly as a Miami guy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, even the Florida fans listening can agree with this, and me and the Gator fan don't agree on a whole lot of things, but if we could have just like maybe won by like a game-winning touchdown pass or something, I would never say game-winning field goal, because with our kicker situation, that wouldn't happen. But maybe if it had been a little bit closer, Willie would still have a job for at least another week, but it is what it is, man, and I'm just going to throw something out there.
Okay.
Bear with me for a second.
I'm all ears.
When you talk about defensive players this season, we're starting to hear, and we know it's not going to happen, but we're starting to hear a lot of Heisman buzz for Chase Young. He's not going to win it. He's not going to win the Heisman Trophy.
Correct.
It's probably going to go to one of these quarterbacks, right? But you're starting to hear some Heisman buzz for Chase Young from Ohio State, who has 13.5 sacks on the year. I know of a guy who wears orange and green who only has 1.5 fewer sacks per season than Chase Young, and that's Greg Russo, who's just bawling right now. Bawling. 4 sacks against Florida State, 2nd in the country in sacks. And I can only imagine, Rashad, how many sacks Greg Russo would have on the year if it didn't take 1.5 months for the coaches to figure out that this guy should be a starter.
It's crazy. I don't know where to begin. The guy, to me, is just a man-child.
He's a monster.
There. A guy to be that big as far as height and weight, to have long arms, and a guy that can play not only defensive end but defensive tackle. And here's the kicker. The guy is only, a redshirt freshman?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Because usually you'll see play like this in a guy's or a kid's third year. Like redshirt sophomore, so true junior.
Right around the time when you know, oh, this might be his last year, and then he's going to the NFL, but you got him for at least one more year.
Yeah, but to think that, you know, to think that you can possibly have this kid for, 3 more years, but if he keeps playing at this level, we know that maybe, 1 more year at best.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just still.
Which is fine. I'll take it. If he balls out so much next year that that's his last year, I'll take that.
It's just still crazy to me. And kudos to Greg Russo for really just playing lights out. To think that this kid has 12.5 sacks and had 4 sacks in one game. Oh my goodness.
And Florida State conceded 9 sacks in that game. That's the most in the history of their program.
Yes.
So, and listen, I know that a lot of people would say, no, that's just an indictment on how bad Florida State is, not how great Miami's defensive front is. It's a lot of both, right? Because it's not like Russo didn't have 8 sacks leading the ACC coming into the game, so you know this guy is a baller. Miami just ate, and they dominated that game, and I'm still thrilled about it, and I'm also thrilled that our man J-Dub really just killed the Cozy Hive last week. Like, rest in peace, Nikosi Perry Hive, because no one can come out of that game and say that Nikosi Perry has the case to be the starter over Jaren Williams. I mean, we now move 2 straight victories. You got Louisville coming up this weekend, and my guy Jay Dubs was throwing dimes to Jeff Thomas, throwing dimes to Brevin Jordan. Mike Harley had the big pass to D. Wiggins for 54 yards to put the game on ice. I mean, putting that performance together, and J-Dub talked, he was either today or yesterday, on how there were just a couple of, like, mechanical things for him, like the reason why he wasn't effectively throwing the deep ball earlier this year, and it was a couple things about sort of his hitch and his hip and his throwing motion that Dan Enos noticed, helped him correct, and, like, it was never an arm strength issue with him, he said. It was more of just an accuracy issue, which is, I guess, kind of also the case with Nikosi Perry, who does not have an arm strength issue, but he was overthrowing guys. He was throwing too hot on a lot of the deep balls. But apparently whatever mechanical issue that was, and he had like a year and a half in the pocket to throw the football, by the way, for some of those passes, but whatever mechanical issue that was has been completely fixed because my man was dropping dimes over the weekend.
You know, with me, I go back to what Manny Diaz said, I think a couple of weeks ago, when he said, at the end of the day, the reason why Jaren wasn't returned, or I guess he wasn't back in the starting lineup, was because we needed Jaren to understand that there's a responsibility that comes with being the starting quarterback. And I think we saw Jaren really take it upon himself this past week to really get in the film room and to really be the first one in the facility and really be the last one out, because I feel like to be a competent quarterback, not even in college football, but in the NFL, you have to just assume those duties. And Jaren, he played like he knew what Florida State was going to do on every defensive snap that they had.
By the way, this may be fair. A texter wrote in at 67974, slow down, Dono, on blaming the coaches for Greg Russo. He was a lazy ass for the first month of the season. Now, he did, he says he was nursing back issues. I think there are some other stories that maybe he wasn't working hard enough.
Uh-huh.
But whatever it was, man, everyone seems to have fit. But, okay, so maybe.
But how much of that can you blame on the coaching? Like, to me, that's where I get upset when I hear fans and texters always say, oh, that's coaching. And then they turn around and say, oh, the kid was lazy.
Right.
At the end of the day, we all have self-initiative. And yes, it is a coach's job to stay on a player, but if a player doesn't want to work and get better, that's on the player. I'm sorry. You just can't keep blaming the coach when the player just refuses to want to better himself.
Well, like before our show started, we were talking with Vlad. Like I heard the two of you guys bring up, speaking of player initiative, Jamarcus Russell.
Correct.
And the infamous story of Jamarcus Russell, because everyone knew he wasn't studying film.
Like correct.
They would give him DVDs of film to study, and they knew he wasn't studying. So the coaches started to give him blank DVDs and say, hey, Jamarcus, how did that film look? Oh, my God, guys, I'm breaking down these defenses. I know what they're nickel and I know what they're going to throw at me this weekend. And, oh, it was a blank DVD like that. When you talk about a lack of player initiative, my man Jamarcus Russell, the purple drank, he was the he was the poster boy for lack of player initiative.
He was. And that right there should have let the Raiders know, you know what? We made not only the wrong decision, but I think it may be time to, you know, cut bait with this guy.
Oh, man. All right, let's get to some headlines.
This is WAXYAM South Miami and WSFSFM HD2 Miramar, a radio.com sports station.
College football playoff rankings, the first batch dropped last night.
Yes.
And I love the way that they're able to just create their own narrative of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I fall into the trap because I love it. I eat the stuff up.
So same here.
The first batch of CFP rankings has Ohio State at number one, LSU number two, Bama three, Penn State four, and Clemson five. Now, if I'm really going to nitpick this thing, the first couple things that jump out at me, I know that there's a lot of people upset. Oh, how can you have the defending national champs, Clemson, at number five when they haven't lost? So the most important criteria, this is what the chairman talked about. The most important criteria are, number one, strength of schedule, which Clemson, unfortunately, in the ACC just does not have.
Correct.
Compared to these other teams. And then the second criteria, most important criteria, dominance against that schedule. And when you think of Clemson escaping with that 21-20 victory against North Carolina, when maybe if North Carolina had kicked the extra point instead of going for two and going over it, who knows what would have happened in that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why they're number five, and I can't argue with that. And the good news out there to any Clemson Tiger fans listening, if you keep winning, the problem is obviously going to sort itself out, because
correct.
This weekend, LSU and Bama go head-to-head,
mm-hmm.
and later this month, OSU and Penn State go head-to-head, so there's going to be enough cannibalism in the top four.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get into that top four if you keep winning.
Well, let's not also forget that Penn State has undefeated Minnesota this weekend.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
So they may be out of the picture.
Yeah, so a lot of people forget about Minnesota being undefeated. When I saw it, I was very surprised that Ohio State was number one. To me, I felt as if it should have been LSU, Alabama, and then Ohio State. And then number four, to me, I would have been fine with either Penn State or Clemson. But I just don't think Ohio State could beat right now either LSU or Alabama. But I understand what the committee is basing it off of, and if they're basing it off of that, then it makes sense, because I think there is six teams right now in the top 25 from the Big Ten Conference, which is the most out of any conference. So I guess that makes sense.
No, I think you made a good point that if Ohio State and Alabama were scheduled to play on a neutral site this weekend, in my opinion, Alabama would be probably a 2.5-3 point favorite in
Correct.
That game. So that's why, so based on your criteria, Alabama should be ranked higher than Ohio State. I think the committee is strictly going by resume for this year.
Exactly.
And I'm very clear to point out this year, because they are not taking into account the fact that Clemson won a national title last year. That is not part of their criteria whatsoever, because I think that's one of the things that Clemson fans are complaining about, is like, how can you penalize us coming off a national championship when we haven't lost a game? They have the blinders on, only looking at this year. They are not looking at last year, and that's
Correct.
Why Clemson is outside of the top four right now.
It makes sense. And Clemson, it's not their fault. I mean, the ACC is just, it's a bad conference as far as what the ACC has put out there on their resume as a conference this season. So I think Clemson fans, they shouldn't be mad, because like you said earlier, everything is going to work itself out. If Clemson just wins out, I think they'll be fine, because like you said, Penn State plays Minnesota this week. Then Penn State turns around, plays Ohio State later. And then, you know, you still have the Big Ten Championship. And then you have the SEC. You have LSU and Alabama this week. And then you have the SEC Championship, which is in the first weekend in December. So everything's going to work itself out for Clemson if they can just win out.
That reminds me, we have some big games still to come this season.
Yeah,
right?
we do a lot.
When you think about Bama and LSU going head-to-head this week, and looks like Tua Tagovailoa is going to play. I never doubt that for a second, right?
Same
here. You are going to inject him with whatever you have to inject his ankle with to make sure he can play. So you're going to get the head-to-head matchup, even though you know both guys play offense, so they're not on the field at the same time. But you're going to get the head-to-head matchup between Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, with every Miami Dolphins executive watching, scratching their head, which guy do you think we're going to be able to draft this year? And it's going to be epic. This is up there with, what was it, 2011, when those two teams were 1-2 or 20, and it was the game of the century.
9-6 was the final score.
9-6 was the final score, and yet it was still awesome. Like, even though nobody was scoring touchdowns, it was still an incredible game.
Correct.
So this is going to be the most hyped up edition of Bama versus LSU since the game.
Question,
of the
Vlad, who were the quarterbacks for each team? Like, can you look that up for us?
Ooh. Oh, what, the last game of the century?
The game of the century.
Yeah, like the 2011 matchup between Alabama and LSU that resulted in LSU winning 9-6.
I hope McElroy wasn't the quarterback for the Crimson Tide.
I think he might have been.
Yeah, I think
it
so, too.
It might have been McElroy. And I want to say
for LSU?
Jefferson? No, was it Jefferson, maybe?
Ooh, it might have been for LSU.
Let me look.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of that, because neither of them were throwing touchdowns.
Exactly.
I should remember who the kickers were is what I should remember for that game.
So this game is going to be huge, because not only do we have 2 versus 3, we have probably the first two quarterbacks that will be drafted in next year's NFL draft.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I can't wait.
Let's get to some other headlines here. Local teams are off tonight. Miami Heat will play the Suns tomorrow night in Phoenix. That'll be a 9 o'clock tip-off. You can hear it right here on 790 The Ticket, with Zazzle starting pregame at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Florida Panthers are back in action tomorrow night as well. They'll host the Washington Capitals, 7 o'clock from the BB&T Center. I'll be a part of that broadcast. You can listen to that game on our sister station, 560 The Joe, with Doug Plagans and Bill Lindsay on the call. Miami Hurricanes hoops team fell to Louisville last night, but the Canes will return to the hardwood on Friday. They'll host FAU from the Watsco Center at 7. You can listen to that game on 560 The Joe. And listen, they fell to number 5 Louisville in a game that very much flew under the radar.
Well, first off, I'm happy that you say Louisville, because Zach and I last night got into an argument.
Really?
Because he says Louisville.
Well, he's not cultured like I am, Rashad.
I heard that.
Yeah, and I say, I'm like, Zach.
It's Louisville.
I say, Zach, it's Louisville. I say, if you ask anybody in Louisville, Kentucky, they'll say Louisville. Zach's like, no, open your mouth. It's Louisville. I'm like, Zach.
Open your mouth.
It's not.
What kind of disrespect is
that? I'm like, it's not Louisville. I'm like, it's Louisville. Trust me. So I'm glad you said, Donald, I'm glad that you said the same way I say a Louisville.
Because there are a couple of rules, Vlad, that I always have to follow, because I know people who are from these cities. Like, I've known people who are from Louisville.
Uh-huh.
And years ago, I used to say Louisville, And
they'll
I got
correct you.
I got slapped enough times and corrected that I noticed at Louisville. And another big one is people who say Oregon instead of Oregon. Like it's Oregon.
Yeah, it is.
It's but, Oregon, yeah.
And if you've ever met a person from Oregon, if you say Oregon in their presence, they'll give you a dirty look. Like yeah. It's not something you say.
I've heard, where's the E? Where's the right. E at the end of the, after the end? That's why this time Oregon is Oregon.
Oregon.
Oh, by the way, to correct myself, it was A.J. McCarron versus Jordan Jefferson.
See, I wasn't sure because A.J. McCarron was he won, what was it, the following year that he won the national title where he embarrassed what was that linebacker with the imaginary girlfriend? He embarrassed Manti Te'o and his non-existent girlfriend down here. But I couldn't remember if he was the quarterback the year prior.
Yeah, it was A.J. versus Jordan Jefferson in the 21-0 beatdown by Alabama in the first game of the century.
Oh, I thought the first game of the century was
2011.
Yeah, that was it. We just checked it
out. Oh, maybe it was 2012 then, the 9-6 game.
The 9-6?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there was a game that they played.
Oh,
was...
didn't they play twice? Because they played, the SEC championship
correct.
As well.
Yeah, so I think.
Or no, they.
Okay.
So was the that might have been the. SEC. That might have been the national title game.
Correct.
Yeah,
that was.
That's what it was.
Okay, so they played during this. And the game during the season was 9-6 during the season. But the national championship, you're right. Alabama won that game 21-0 in the national championship that year. Correct.
Confirmed.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And the final headline, Miami Hurricanes football team, who got Willie Taggart fired last weekend, will look for a third straight win when they host Louisville, another Louisville game for Miami, on Saturday. Kickoff is set for 3:30 from Hard Rock Stadium. Pregame coverage on 560 The Joe will start at 11:30. By the way, I think I triggered a few Florida State fans with the way that I talked about their coaching situation and their team.
First off, let me give myself some credit because on Sunday with Brian Monroe, I said I wouldn't be surprised if they make a coaching change at Florida State.
Yeah.
And Brian was like, He's like, I wouldn't be surprised either, but – I want Willie Taggart to stay around. I said, Brian, trust me.
I was with Brian on that one.
I get it. I said, Brian, trust me. After what we saw yesterday, which was Saturday then, I said, I'll be highly surprised if he's not on the first plane out within the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with Brian a lot.
Because that offense just looks so anemic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a Florida State fan, but watching that game, I really felt bad for Florida State fans because I'm saying to myself, why aren't they pushing the ball down the field with all that talent and speed that they have, you know, at Florida State? Like, why are they throwing the ball horizontally and trying to make one man miss? Because, you know, against Miami, who has equal speed, that's hard to make it – like, that's hard to happen.
Yeah, and when I talked to Monroe about that, like, he would bring up the, you know, the $18 million buyout.
Yeah.
Which – but when you think about it, like, in Miami terms – With the limited alumni base and booster base that we have.
Correct.
If it was a Miami coach, you're right. An $18 million buyout would be a non-starter. Like, you've got to keep the coach another year just to afford it. But Florida State, they obviously, and apparently they had been probably raising that money for longer. So
absolutely.
I know I'm, and again, the Florida State fans are jumping all over me. Like, I know that it wasn't just that one Miami loss that made Florida State's boosters decide, okay, now we've got to make a change. Like, that certainly accelerated the process. But I think this Taggart firing had been in the works for a while. Because, you're not raising $18 million, like, over one night to fire a coach. But you can raise that $18 million a lot more easily at Florida State than you can at Miami.
Exactly.
And they were able to conjure that money to make that coaching change. Oh, man. 567-974 is how you reach us on the text line. Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you, with the great Vlad Lusant on the other side of the glass. We continue here on 790 The Ticket. Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you on 790 The Ticket. I'm filling in for Zach Duarte. Did you say he was in Sweden?
Yes, I don't know if he left already today, but I know he's leaving pretty soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one spot I've never been to. I've spent a little time in Europe, but I've never been to Sweden.
Same here.
I've got, like, great-grandparents who are from there.
Okay.
You know, they came over, like, great-grandma, I think, came over in a boat, stopped at Ellis Island, did that whole deal.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm yet to go over there.
Wow.
Although I'm a married guy, so I probably wouldn't. there's a lot of talent over there in Sweden.
Yes.
So I'm probably best, like, not even, not that they would want anything to do with me, but I'm probably, it's probably better for everyone that I don't go over there and even look over the menu over there.
I hear you.
Oh, man. So this text came in 67974. Okay. Born and raised in the 305, texter writes, I am an FSU loyalist. I am a Miami fan, but pull toward FSU. Come on, though. Before the FSU fan, everyone in Miami was starting to pull out pitchforks for Manny Diaz. So I think he's trying to say that, I think before the FSU win, I think I read that incorrectly, but basically saying that we've all done an about face, that everyone wanted Manny's head. Mm-hmm. Okay, you probably
certain
saw
fans.
That. Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
So, okay, you may have seen some mentally ill people on Twitter.
Correct.
Calling for Manny Diaz's job 7 games into the season, mm-hmm. but that was a fringe that I do not believe represents the rational-minded members of the
fan. Bingo.
As few of us as there may be.
Correct.
Because, okay, I get it, that a lot of hardcore Miami Hurricanes fans don't always think and speak very rationally.
Uh-huh.
But you can't base some knuckleheads on social media talking about, oh, we were sold all these false promises with Manny Diaz on the yacht and crashing the coaches. Okay, so Manny Diaz had a lot of bravado, mm-hmm. then a very poor start to the season. But no sane-minded Miami fan was calling for the man's head 7 games in. Like, you can
Correct.
Be disappointed with the way the team is playing,
uh-huh.
but that doesn't mean a rational individual like me, like Rashad, like Vlad, we're actually calling for Manny Diaz's job, so you don't have to throw that in our face. Like, we know he's on scholarship for at least, what would you say, 2 full seasons?
Correct.
I mean, I know Willie Taggart at Florida State didn't even make it 2 full seasons there.
Well, here's my thing. This is 2 things that I feel really hurt Willie Taggart. The first is there just wasn't any progression from year 1 to this year as far as offensively. And Willie Taggart was hired because he was deemed, and I'm doing air quotes here, as an offensive genius.
Right.
And Florida State just didn't have the improvement that the athletic department or the boosters wanted to see from year 1 to year 2. And then to make matters worse, there really wasn't any, the kids weren't relating to Willie Taggart to where he was losing the team, to where a lot of kids were just kind of doing their own thing. You even had parents calling in on local radio stations complaining about Willie Taggart, blah, blah, blah. So
wow.
He really never had no control.
And doing sports talk in Tallahassee must have been a lot of fun the last few weeks.
Yeah, like,
wait, who's Cam Akers? Mom on the phone? Okay, let's go to line 3.
So anytime you have that on top of a coach not living up to expectations on the field of play, it's just it doesn't mix for a good recipe. So I think those 2 things really spelled the end for Willie Taggart at Florida State.
Not that you did a whole lot of losing in your career, but is it, you think it's one of the hardest things for coaches to not lose their locker room when a team is bad? Because that's got to be mm-hmm. one of the toughest things, right? Because when a team is like a proud historic program like Florida State is missing a bowl game 1 year and then in jeopardy of not being bowl eligible a second straight year. And you can even see on the field that guys are starting to point the finger, like when you're missing tackles,
Correct.
No, that was his assignment, it's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You can start to see some of that. So it's got to be one of the toughest things in any team sport. We'll focus on football for the sake of this conversation. For a head coach to actually, and maybe that doesn't always fall on the coach because this falls, I think, on leadership in the locker room as well, but for a team not to just fall apart and turn on their head coach when they're playing terrible football, that's got to be one of the tougher things, right?
For players, what we want to see, and I played on some bad teams, and one thing that made me, I guess, look at the bright side was making sure that the correct decisions were made as far as, is this guy playing because this guy deserves to play because he's practicing the way he's supposed to practice from week to week. Now, if coaches are putting players out there and you're saying to yourself, hold on, why is so-and-so playing? Like, I see so-and-so get beat almost every other day in practice.
Right.
Now, that's when coaches lose the locker room. And that's why I can respect Brian Flores for saying, you know what? I can't continue to put Josh Rosen out here because if I do, then it's obvious that Ryan Fitzpatrick is the better quarterback, and I can lose this locker room, and I can have my players saying, "Well, why aren't you playing the best guy? Like, you are not giving us a chance to win, and all we want to do is have a chance to win.
Wow, this is just savage from Rick and Davey. He says, Dono, maybe Willie could coach Miami Springs High School football. Well, I mean, I will point out that after things went south for the Al Golden regime, wasn't Mark D'Onofrio coaching YMCA? Although that was probably because his kids were playing.
I'm not sure.
I think he was. And you know what? I shouldn't have even brought that up because to be honest.
Okay.
For like a collegiate, you know, Power Five defensive coordinator to actually spend a year or two coaching children, like, that's a really nice thing he was doing for the community.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I don't want to bring that up to slander the guy, but it did happen. So maybe high school football might be in Willie Taggart's future. Who knows?
But again, it makes you wonder how come he wasn't getting any offers from any other Power Five, you know, universities. Right.
Well, and it goes to show you, because what he ended up at Houston a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes to show you that no matter how bad your reputation is in one moment, if you just lay low for a year or two,
oh yeah,
then they're going to come back around
for sure.
Right? I mean, no matter how much it stinks right now, like, even would it surprise you if a guy like Adam Gase, who probably doesn't survive to next year as the New York Jets head coach, well, you know, after getting fired 2 years in a row. It hasn't happened yet. Like, uh-huh. I'm not breaking any news. But let's just assume Adam Gase doesn't make it to 2020, uh-huh. right? Gets fired 2 years in a row, Miami and New York. Yeah, he's probably going to have to lay low for a year.
Correct.
Right? But then in 2021, would it surprise you if he ends up either in, like, a big-time offensive coordinator gig or a head coach somewhere? Because we have very short memories when it comes to these big-time sports teams, because when you're investing millions of dollars in a coach, mm-hmm. as much as you can say, well, why would you invest millions of dollars in a guy who's failed already? The counter argument would be, at least we're investing millions of dollars to a guy who's actually coached at that level before. So that's why you fall into that coaching carousel trap.
I don't know if I can say head coach ever again. Personally, at the NFL level, I think if he's fired from the Jets, I think he won't be a head coach ever again at the NFL level. But I do believe someone may take the cheese and may hire him as a offensive coordinator.
I think that would happen for sure.
Or at least, if not a OC, a quarterback's coach.
Or maybe he ends up head coach of an XFL team.
Because, like Vlad and I talked about many times before, that endorsement from Peyton Manning is really keeping Adam Gase alive. It really is.
It's crazy. It's like, at some point, is Peyton Manning going to retract that?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's kind of embarrassing to Peyton to say, hey, Peyton, I think you're really, what is that thing he hosts? Peyton's Place? Like,
correct.
Hey, Peyton, I think you're really funny. You're really witty.
Mm-hmm.
Your game breakdowns are really good. But bro, what's up with that Adam Gase endorsement?
Yeah.
Like, at what point correct. Does Peyton come out and say, you know what, guys, I'm going to retract that Adam Gase endorsement. No more.
Yeah.
So at 7 o'clock, we're gonna have a day spa headline.
Oh, nice
session.
Again.
Dan Day's coming in.
My second time. I'm excited.
Isn't you always feel weird after the day spa because you're never sure if he's gonna get us all fired or not?
True.
Because it always takes that southward turn.
But I like the music though.
I love the
classic.
Music. When we come back, I want to get into a couple of debates, Miami Dolphins related stuff. Okay. So first of all, everyone now has an opinion on Joe Burrow versus Tua Tagovailoa.
Exactly.
I want us to give our 2 cents on that.
Okay.
And there are a couple of other things I want to get into. Alex Dono and Rashad Butler with you on 790 The Ticket. Keep it locked till 10 p.m. here tonight. Alex Dono, Rashad Butler with you till 10 o'clock tonight here on 790 The Ticket. Hey, it's 7 o'clock. I can see him now wandering around the building, Dan Day.
Same.
Yeah, I guess because, you know, he would usually be producing the Best of the Joe show, but
uh-huh.
since Hurricane Hotline is on tonight, there's no Best of the Joe. So
Hurricane Hotline.
Yeah, so Dan Day is just wandering around the building waiting for 7 o'clock.
So
wandering aimlessly around
so
the building.
So with Hurricane Hotlines, do they take calls?
I don't believe they do, no.
Okay.
No.
Good for them.
Why do you say that?
Because he has to deal with it after every
yes.
hurricane's
well, yeah,
game,
but wouldn't they mostly be happy calls like on a day like today?
You would think so.
Florida State?
But you'll be surprised because sometimes the games that Miami has won this year or this season, we've had fans call in and they just don't seem happy about anything.
Well, I could see after Central Michigan.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That was a win that felt like a loss.
Exactly. I agree.
Although I'll take the W because they may end up like being bowl eligible mm-hmm. because of that win.
True.
So I'll take it.
But you know what? It's always someone out there that just is never satisfied, no matter what happens.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, I'm not going to say I've never been guilty of that
uh-huh.
because I can remember back in 01, mm-hmm. which was one of the greatest seasons a team has ever had in college football history.
Correct.
Our Miami Hurricanes, and yet I was really upset they didn't look better against Boston College. Like, remember the game where you got like where Matt Walters and Ed Reed saved the day on that final drive with yeah. the Walters had the INT, he laterals it to Ed Reed who scored the touchdown. Like, I could remember after that win being like, man, I'm so disappointed. Dorsey looked terrible today. The mm-hmm. O-line didn't look great. What are we doing? We barely beat Boston College. And that was a national championship season. So, I mean, I don't think any Canes fan should be like that in this big 2019 when yep. when you can't beat Virginia Tech.
You know, it's crazy about that season because the only two close games, if I can remember, we had, that was my true freshman year, was Boston College and I think Virginia Tech, the last game of the season up in Blacksburg. To actually seal going to the Rose Bowl because Ed Reed got a late pick in that game.
I remember that. Which, and always.
But man, it was a close game for the most part.
How money was Ed Reed? Like, any time. And then Sean Taylor was the same when he Correct. Came around. But, like, any time you needed a big defensive stop, not only was Ed Reed going to pick it off, but he was going to run it the other way for a touchdown. Like, every mm-hmm. time, this is an unofficial Dono stat. This is a Dono memory stat. Because, I mean, the internet in 2001, that was barely a thing. Anytime Ed Reed got his hands on the football, 100% of the time, he was scoring a touchdown.
Correct.
Like, anytime he picked up a fumble, even when he didn't make the interception himself, if Matt Walters made the interception, he would yell at Matt Walters, lateral it to me so I can score a touchdown. Every time that guy touched the football, touchdown.
To me, the one thing I remember about that season was how great our secondary was with Ed Reed, James Lewis as our two safeties, and we had Phillip Buchanan and Mike Rump.
Oh my God.
And whenever any one of them got an interception, the entire hopes was that, you know what, they were going to take it the distance.
Right.
And no one for a second doubted that that was not possible because that's just how electric that secondary was for like that one year.
God, we were so spoiled. And right there, like, okay, the last 3 minutes of conversation we just uh-huh. had is the reason why Miami fans can be so insufferable because
True.
We are still, unfortunately, holding our team to a standard where it's not that you expect the team to be what it was in 2001, but you still have that memory knowing this is what Hurricanes football used to be and could be. And so when you have that in the back of your mind, it's why so many of us give these teams a hard time when they're underachieving.
I get it. I truly do.
Quick question before we move on to the okay. Dolphins. This is really for you because you would have experience in this area. Texter writes in, the Heat looked sick last night. Rashad, I know you played in the league. Why is it so difficult to play in Denver? Every time we go there, it's a loss. Now, that's an altitude thing, right?
Yeah, correct.
I've been to Denver, but I've only been there for, like, drinking sessions and you know, just, like, wandering around the streets. Like, I've never played a, mm-hmm. a sport in Denver. Is it really as hard to play there as they say it is?
It is. I played up in Denver just one time. That was when they actually had Tim Tebow at quarterback. And it's funny that they actually beat us late in that game.
You
but,
lost to Tebow.
Yeah,
Don't
I did.
Worry, we all did.
And the one thing I remember about that game, funny, true story, I used to go out for warm-ups and just warm up on my own for about a good 15, 20 minutes, get like a little nice sweat going, kind of get loosened up. And I remember I had to cut my workout short by 10 minutes because my workout was pretty intense. Like mm-hmm. I made sure like to kind of get like a nice lather going. And within 10 minutes, I kid you not, like I was breathing like a dog, like I was panting.
Jeez.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a long game for me.
God.
Yeah.
How'd I get high in Colorado then?
Oh, no, it's easier. No, because like, I've never done that in Colorado, but just even like drinking a beer there, like you get drunk like twice as.
Wow, seriously?
Like with like half the alcohol you would normally get.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a magical place, Denver. It really is. And now they got the legal weed flowing around. Like,
oh, man.
I haven't been in Denver in over a decade, but who knows what's
Sounds
going
like
on there
now. Sounds like an enchanted forest.
It does, right?
It really is. It really is, man. Okay, so it looks like the Cam Newton era in Carolina is done.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it's a minority of Dolphin fans. I would think less than 50% of Dolphin fans are petitioning for this, but I have seen his name brought up by fans saying, hey, maybe we make a run at Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. And if this were a different situation for Miami Dolphins football, I think this is the type of player, and you know, whether they're looking for a trade or they cut him outright, I think either of those could happen. But in the recent past, this would be the type of player that Stephen Ross would be saying, get me this guy, I will cut the check, do what you got to do. Because, you know, we know how he liked to go after the flashy names, but I just don't believe where Miami Dolphins football is right now in the current state and what they're building towards, that you make a run for an expensive quarterback on the wrong side of 30 who does have injury issues. It's not the right situation. And also, like, you brought this up to me, Rashad. Why would Cam Newton want to come here with Correct. The way the Dolphins are at this point? This is not a patient man.
No, I agree. The Dolphins, their window right now is closed very tightly. And it will start to open, I think, possibly next season in 2021. But the perfect destination for me, for Cam, would be Chicago. Now, whether that comes via a trade or just free agency if Carolina has to release him. But Chicago, to me, they are still a contender. Their window is still open. I think the only thing that is holding them back right now is the quarterback position. I think adding Cam to that position will get them back into contention for, a Super Bowl.
And that's exactly what Cam is looking for.
Correct, he is.
I mean, he's 31 years old, and I know that for quarterbacks nowadays, 31 doesn't seem that old, but he's got the mileage. He's got the injury issues. Mm-hmm. So Cam Newton, I don't believe he's going to play into his 40s like Tom Brady and Drew Brees. I think that his window to play the game at a high level is closing pretty quickly because of just his physical condition. So, yeah, he's got to be looking at a situation where I'm not looking for a team that's trying to build a contender over the next 2-3 years. Like, I'm looking for a team that believes, and I believe, we can win next year if I show up there. So I don't think anything about this current Dolphins project is appealing to him. And as far as I'm concerned, the feeling should be mutual, because the Miami Dolphins front office, you need to be looking to find the next great 21-year-old quarterback, not 31-year-old quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be looking at the Joe Burrows or the Tuas, who you're going to see go head-to-head this weekend. And I know a lot can change between November and April, but as we stand right now, November 6th, the year of our Lord, 2019, Rashad Butler's got to pick one for the Miami Dolphins.
Okay.
Do you go with Burrow or do you go with Tua?
That's easy. I'm going with Tua. And I choose Tua primarily because he is, in my opinion, the safest pick. And what I mean by that is I think Tua has a more impressive body of work. Now, some people may question the ankles and the
injuries.
Yeah,
I'm getting worried about the injuries.
And I get that, but you're at a position where you can't miss. And anytime you're in a position where you can't miss, it's in your best interest to actually err on the side of the safest person. And I feel like knowing what Tua has shown us since he entered the national championship game, in 2017, and then the season he had last year, and then the season he's having this year, it's just hard for me to kind of turn a blind eye to that. Now, I do like Joe Burrow, but for me to be completely sold on Joe Burrow, I need him to run the table. And that may be unfair, but right now, just 8 games, I just can't draft a guy number one or put him over a guy like Tua that has more game experience.
It's the body of work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, for me to be all in on Joe Burrow, I need Joe Burrow to run the table, beat Alabama this week, look good, then beat Georgia in the SEC championship, look good, then actually beat whoever it is in the national championship game, whether it's Clemson, Ohio State, and look good. And to me, if he does that, then I may start to say, you know what? My mind may change. But until then, I'm all Tua.
There's a couple things I really like about Burrow. And aside from the fact that these are both excellent quarterbacks, now, I mean, you're you're splitting hairs if you really try to say that one guy is a lot better than the other. Like, you just can't make an argument for one guy being clearly better than the other right now, because they're both top five in every relevant offensive statistical category. But, I mean, with Burrow, and this may not be fair because I don't know if the injuries that Tua has suffered, mostly ankle stuff, has really been his fault or if it's just bad luck. Like, you would know that stuff better than me. Yeah. But so I don't know if you can really fault him for this, but Burrow seems to be the slightly less injury prone. Now, you know, everyone's talking about the stories of his toughness because it was revealed that before they played Bama last year, he suffered a separated shoulder in practice on Thursday, you know, got shot up with the painkillers, went out there, toughed it out, and, you know, lost to Alabama on Saturday. But they're telling these legendary stories of Joe Burrow's toughness. But he does seem to be the less injury prone of the two. That may be a weaker argument. But another thing, and again, the stats are great for both guys, but Burrow's numbers under pressure are slightly significantly better than Tua's numbers under pressure. And I know people bring up the fact that, yeah, he plays Tua, you know, and plays behind, you know, maybe arguably the best offensive line in college football, and you put him behind a struggling NFL offensive line, what's he going to look like? You know, for what it's worth, Burrow's numbers, stats, are better under pressure than Tua's stats under pressure. But I agree with what you said, that if we were doing this draft right now, thankfully we're not, but if we were doing this draft right now and the Dolphins were in position to choose between the two of those guys, which won't be a guarantee in April, because if the Dolphins end up with the third overall pick, then one of the two of them might be off the board by the time they pick, and the problem will take care of itself.
Correct.
But if the draft was tonight and they could choose between the two of those players, I believe they would choose Tua just because there's more evidence to draw from.
But here's one thing that I believe people are forgetting about Tua. This kid has played under three different offensive coordinators, because now I need to understand, why didn't it work out for Joe Burrow at Ohio State? And then why didn't Joe Burrow have the year?
Yeah, he got beaten out by Dwayne Haskins, right?
But not even that. Why Joe Burrow didn't have the year that he's having this year in 2018? Because, again, when I bring up Tua, he played under three offensive coordinators, like three different ones. Now, granted, in 2017 he didn't play. That was mostly Jalen Hurts. But 2018 he had a different offensive coordinator than he has this year. So to me, that's impressive,
right?
Because not every system is the same schematically.
Does the left-hand thing matter to you either way? And I bring this up because somebody tweeted me today, Dono, can you name a really successful left-handed quarterback?
Steve Young.
Yeah, but my counter to it was
Michael Vick.
Yes.
Ooh, that's correct. A good one. But like also like, how many left-handers are there?
Correct.
like what are there, two left-handed people to every 45, 50 right-handed people? Like, you could only name a couple of successful left-handed quarterbacks.
And by the way, that's
Steve Young, but how many left-handed quarterbacks have there been?
Listen, that's a bad argument. Like, that, whoever asked you that question, I would have balked in their face, like, get out of here, man.
I think he's racist against left-handers is what he is.
Like, that is one of the most craziest things to even ever, like, thinking about. Because, like you just said, like, there's not a lot of left-handers. So just by you making that statement, it's almost irrelevant.
Look, I got a 20-month-old son. I'm trying to make him left-handed so that he can be a starting pitcher somewhere and just buy me a big house.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, I'm trying to make that a thing. So,
you're not wrong for that.
So Mark Brunell gets no love?
I forgot about Mark Brunell.
He was a left-hander.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The snake doesn't get no love?
So Jake Plummer.
Jake Plummer was
a
lefty?
No, the original snake.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Kenny Snake Stevens.
Yes, that's right. From the Raiders.
Turns
out there have been
from Alabama, correct?
Right.
Yes.
There you go.
Boomer gets no love?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a left-hander either. Yeah. So it turns out, like, the guy who asked me that question on Twitter, he stumped me because I don't know who's left-handed. I think that's what we've learned today.
Yeah.
Well, one guy I remember was left-handed, who was a big NFL bust, was Cade McNown.
Yes.
And the only reason I know he's left-handed was when he, like, had a cup of tea with the Miami Dolphins. He was, like, a third-string quarterback. I used to sometimes put him in when I was playing Madden. And I'm like, wow, he's a left. That's the only reason I know he's a left-hander, because he was a left-hander on Madden, assuming they got that right. Oh, man. When we come back, we will step into the day spa
Ooh.
For Dan Day's headlines next.